It's time to start thinking about our biggest fundraiser of the year, the Time, Talent, and Treasure Auction. Our silent auction will start on October 22nd and run through our live auction on Saturday, November 4th. Be sure to save the date and invite your family and friends. With everyone's participation, both donating and bidding on items, this will be a very fun and successful event. Donations need to be submitted by October 15th, either emailed to Lynn Smith, put in the bin in the social hall, or you can submit online through our website. Thanks, everyone. Coming Saturday, October 14th at 6:30 p.m., we're having an open mic night, calling all musicians, soloists, bands, monologue performers, poetry readers, what have yous, and appreciative audience members. The Music Ministry Committee is sponsoring our second ever open mic night. Join us for a wonderful family-friendly evening of performances and camaraderie. Snacks and beverages will be available, and we'll be asking for a free will donation. Sign up in the social hall to perform or bring a snack. So sing a song, play an instrument, read a poem, tell a story, do a dance, whirl a Rubik's Cube, stack some cups. Use your imagination and have some fun. You can sign up in the social hall or talk to Nancy or Doug following the service. On October 7th, the music, worship, and religious education staff are holding our fifth annual Sukkah building celebration and cookout by the fire pit. We are inviting anyone who wants to come, but especially the children and youth, to come and help us build a traditional Jewish sukkah or hut. We will meet at 5 to build, and at 6 we will have a bonfire and potluck or hot dog roast. New this year, for the first time, anyone who wants to camp out is encouraged to bring a tent and set up. We will have the building open for overnight to use the bathrooms. Bring a guitar, other instrument, bring corn stalks, vines, straw bales, or other natural building materials, and gather up some food and drinks. Come join us on October 7th at 5 p.m. Today's designated collection is for the Kettle Moraine Food Pantry. All loose coins and bills, any checks with Kettle Moraine Food Pantry on the memo line will go to that food pantry. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend. LCUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and we are open to all people, regardless of whom they love or what pronouns they use. Come and explore what community can mean for you. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics you may have here with you today. Thank you. Thank you. Please rise in body or spirit and join singing our opening hymn, number 151, I Wish I Knew How, in the Gray Hymnal.
William Ellery Channing, the 19th century Unitarian, said once in a sermon about slavery, "I am a living member of the great family of all souls, and sometimes I think the church has no greater purpose than to convince us all of that and to proclaim it to anyone who needs to hear it, which is everyone. Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whatever your story, you are a living member, and your baby is a living member of the great family of all souls. It is so easy in this life to forget or never to know that you absolutely belong. By definition, as a person, as a creature, you belong. Despite what you may have been told, despite your own darkest doubts and suspicions, you have a place at the table, and the universe is glad to see you. In this congregation, we mean to be for each other the eyes and the ears, the welcoming voice, the incarnate embodied, real, live embrace of the universe or of God. I'm not sure that God has any other way of showing up except through us. That is universalism. That is radical hospitality. That is radical welcome home. And it extends to all of us and it extends to everyone. It is a theological idea not unique to our tradition by any means, but it is central here. Radical means literally, not wild, but to the very root. And to our very roots, we are glad you are here. So please take a moment to say hello or to introduce yourself to the people around you this morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Claire Johnson, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. Whether you are here with us for the day or here for a lifetime, we are glad you have chosen to join us for worship, community, and celebration.
One of the underlying assumptions of radical welcome and radical hospitality is the simple one: everyone is welcome. And we want to believe that when it gets dark and cold, anyone can come into the warmth of love and acceptance and prosperity. Anyone can come home and sleep safely in this house that we call America. But in our country right now, this isn't always true. Black people are dying in outrageously disproportionate numbers due to police brutality every day. And around the country, led by black NFL players of all people. Players like Colin Kaepernick. People are protesting this in very specific ways. They take a knee. They kneel on one knee during the national anthem or at any other time when all eyes are on them so that no one can look away. They don't kneel out of hatred. They kneel to call us to our better selves. They kneel to remind us that all lives do not matter until black and brown lives matter. Until then, all is missing something. Until then, our radical hospitality is flawed and our door is firmly shut. Today is the day after the Jewish Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur. And we are talking about forgiveness and atonement and how we journey back to being whole. And part of the way we do that is by saying, "Forgive me, I did the wrong thing." Part of it is by admitting the wrong, witnessing the wrong, and ending any attempt to deny the wrong. Part of it is by letting the victim know they are not alone. By opening the door of witness so that others can join around our warming fire and make it their own. Here in church, we don't normally play the national anthem. But by gosh, all eyes are on me. And so today, I witness. And I kneel in solidarity with other people who are black and brown and tan like me. I kneel in witness to their pain and their fear and their oppression and their deaths. I kneel in solidarity with white allies who also work for justice. I kneel in witness of their efforts to overcome centuries of oppressive systems. I kneel in protest of any police brutality anywhere. And I invite you to join me, if not in kneeling, in at least a moment of silence while I take a knee for all those who have died, all those who have been battered, all those who have been brutalized. Amen.
One of the ways we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you, and invite the children to stay up and enjoy a story. Today's story is the Berenstain Bears. It's called Say I'm Sorry. It was a hot summer day. Brother, sister, and Honey Bear were filling their pool. Sister held the hose. She bent over to scratch her foot. The hose squirted Brother in the face. I'm sorry, said Sister. Brother was angry. Now, Brother, said Mama, Sister didn't do it on purpose. And she said, I'm sorry, said Papa. You're right, said Brother. That's all right, he said to Sister. But Honey started to laugh. Brother was wet. It's not nice to laugh when someone gets wet, Mama told Honey. Sorry, said Honey. Said Brother. Let me see that hose. Sister gave it to him. With a grin, Brother squirted Honey and Sister. That's not nice, Brother, said Papa. Sister and Honey both said they're sorry. Brother stopped. Papa was right. Brother felt a little guilty. I'm sorry, he said. Here, said Brother. He handed the hose to Sister. You can squirt me back. No, that's all right, said Sister. You said I'm sorry. She put the hose into the pool to fill it up. But Honey wanted a turn. With a little grin, she grabbed the hose and squirted Brother and Sister. Hey, they yelled. No fair. Honey stopped squirting them. I'm sorry, she said. But then Brother and Sister started laughing. That's all right, they said. This is fun. Honey chased them with the hose. The cubs laughed so hard they fell down. They took turns squirting each other. They got very wet. It felt good on such a hot day. Now let's fill the pool, said Sister. So they did. The cubs climbed in with their pool toys. But the water was cold, but it felt very good. Ah, they said. Honey saw the hose still running. She started to pick it up. Honey, warned Mama and Papa, that's enough squirting. Sorry, she said, putting it down. That's okay, said Brother and Sister. They settled down to play in the cool water on that hot summer day. And that is my story.
Could I have our lantern bearer, please? May the light and love of our chalice lead you all today and every day. And if you all would help me in singing the children to their classroom, the song is For You Shall Go Out, and the words are in your order of service.
Thank you.
No matter how weak or frightened we may feel, we each have gifts that can make a difference in the world. In this coming week, may you do at least one thing to support the broken, to welcome the stranger, to celebrate what is worthy, and to do the work of justice and of love. Be strong, be connected, each day act so that you may be a little more whole. When we take our offering collection each week, we are reminding ourselves through ritual to do exactly that, to be strong, to be connected, to join with one another, to give to one another, to make a difference for one another through our gifts, large and small. We don't give as an act of payment. We give to remind ourselves that giving is a joy, and that when we share, we also receive. You don't have to give much, though you can if you like. Most of us pledge online. Reach into your pocket or purse, give what you can. Give something that jingles, give a dollar bill, give the pennies that are sitting in the bottom of your purse. Remind yourself of the wonderful church that your gifts have helped to create. Today's designated collection is for the Kettle Moraine Food Pantry. So any of those loose coins or bills and any checks where you write for the Kettle Moraine Food Pantry on the memo line, those will all go to that food pantry. So this morning's offering will now be given and gratefully received. Thank you so much for everything that you do and for these gifts today, given and received for the life and the work of this community. We call ourselves the Church of the Open Mind and the Loving Heart, and we are here in part to bear witness and to hold one another in the moments of our lives where we are most fragile and most beautiful, because we are a community of human hands and human hearts. And this is the time in our service where we minister to one another and we speak briefly about the good and the bad happening to us and to the world. Before the service, you're always welcome to light a candle silently at the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud and a worship associate lights candles for us. So if you'd like to share a joy or need to have us be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand and one of the ushers will bring you a microphone.
My name is Fran, and I'd like to let all of you know that on September 9th, my former husband, Jerry Bills, passed away after a very long illness, and he was surrounded by the love of his children and his family. And I know some members of the congregation did know Jerry, and you know, may he rest in peace. And thank you for lighting a candle, Claire.
This is Jerry, not that Jerry. I'm in the back. Please light a candle of joy for the folks who volunteered this past week to serve Bread of Life meals to the elderly of the Greater Heartland community. Bread of Life is an endeavor by area churches to serve one meal a month to the elderly and the surrounding community. This program, like Family Promise, is an opportunity for our church to participate in the interfaith life of our community.
My name is Ed. I'd like to light a candle for my sister Jean, who passed away last night. And she was always the life of a party, and I'm sure she's keeping everybody in heaven right now, jumping and hollering and singing. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. This is Scott. So my son, Kai, who's got his behavioral challenges and probably hearing my wife and I's frustrations with him more often than we're celebrating him. Well, that little knucklehead hit a hole-in-one yesterday. We were on someone's private residence, but it's a big residence, and they had a couple little short, you know, golf greens and such set up, and he teed off about 50, 60 yards away, smacked that ball, and I'm like, no way, no way, no way. It went in. So my father-in-law and I celebrated him quite a bit yesterday. I think he felt pretty good about himself.
Hi, this is Mike. Just a candle of joy that our daughter Nadine will be getting married next Saturday. So she grew up in the CU congregation, and so I'm familiar with most of you around here. So candle of joy. Thanks.
This is Gary. Could you light a candle of hope for our democracy with the Wisconsin gerrymandering redistricting case before the Supreme Court this week? Hope that that turns in a positive direction.
I'd like to add a candle of concern for my supervisor, Susie Schomer, who her mother had too many strokes in the past month, and she's rehabilitating, but she's still suffering a lot with depression as well as confusion.
I'd like to light a candle of love and remembrance for my beloved friend, the Reverend Dr. John Poole, who died this week. John was a leading light in the fight for civil rights in Cincinnati, in the fight for LGBTQ rights, though he never intended to be. And may his memory be blessed. And we light our last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows, which we haven't been able to speak here today, but which we hold deeply in our hearts.
Now is the time for turning. The leaves are beginning to turn from green to red and orange. The birds are beginning to turn and are heading once more towards the south. The animals are beginning to turn to storing their food for the winter. For leaves, birds, and animals, turning comes instinctively. But for us, turning does not come so easily. It takes an act of will for us to make a turn. It means breaking with old habits. It means admitting that we have been wrong, and this has never been easy. It means losing face. It means starting all over again, and this is always painful. It means saying, "I'm sorry." It means recognizing that we have the ability to change. These things are hard to do. But unless we turn, we will be trapped forever in yesterday's ways. God, help us to turn from callousness to sensitivity, from hostility to love, from pettiness to purpose, from envy to contentment, from carelessness to discipline, from fear to faith. Turn us around, O God, and bring us back towards you. Revive our lives as at the beginning. And turn us toward each other, God. For in isolation, there is no life. Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a moment of silent thought, meditation, or the spirit of prayer.
Our second reading, entitled "You Can Talk" by Alice Walker, a poem that reminds us that forgiveness is not just something divinely granted, but also something which we receive as a gift of our divine humanity. You can talk about the balm in Guild, but what about the balm right here? What about the healing of the wounded heart when someone you have harmed gleefully embraces you? Here ends the second reading. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 354 in the Gray Hymnal, "We Laugh, We Cry."
Thank you.
For many people, rituals matter. This is the point in the Jewish year where we are ready to move forward into new things. Yom Kippur began Friday night and it finished Saturday. It was the Day of Atonement, the day that allows us to take a first step, to begin again in forgiveness. It gives us a chance for healing and to reclaim our own divine power of creation. But in order to take that step, we do two things. We witness to one another and we stand in witness for one another. Through ritual, we speak aloud our realization that, yeah, we have made mistakes this year. And yes, we reclaim our own wholeness and that we are right to reclaim that wholeness. We are deserving of reclaiming that wholeness, of welcoming ourselves home. And once we welcome ourselves back, we are free to welcome others into wholeness in all their perfection and in all their brokenness. Quite a few years ago now, Reverend Rob Eller Isaacs wrote a litany of atonement. And we are going to do it together today. I will say a sentence and you will respond to my sentence with, "We forgive ourselves and each other and we begin again in love." And I ask that as you do this, you think about your year. What you will choose to let go of as you begin this new year. So the response again, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that we have struck out in anger without cause, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. For these and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. Amen. In my blurb for this sermon, I ask a couple of questions. What happens once you've said you're sorry? Claire read a cute little story this morning with the bears, stained bears. I'm sorry. Okay, all is good now. It helps children understand how to use sorry in a conversation. It's lovely. But can things ever return to the way they were? Can you really find your way back into welcome and make things all okay again? This is a great day to talk about mistakes and about forgiveness. As I said earlier, Yom Kippur ended yesterday. It's the day we admit we're not perfect. And we realize that doesn't excuse us. And we try to do better. And that holiday starts with a prayer called the Kol Nidre. I'd sing it, but I can't sing. The Kol Nidre releases us from all of the vows and the promises and the bonds which we took on ourselves in this last year. And I know some of you are thinking, well, I didn't vow anything. Come on, what'd I vow? He vowed a lot. I'm not going to lose my temper this year. I'm going to be really nice to my husband even when he forgets to take the garbage out. I'm going to be really nice to my wife even when she burns dinner. I'm not going to scream at the TV when I don't like the politicians. I'm not going to scream at the politicians. The Kol Nidre releases us from all of that, and it gives us permission to pray with our neighbors, to be in community with our neighbors who have also been released from all those kinds of vows and promises. It doesn't pretend the vows weren't made. It doesn't pretend that we upheld them all. Oh yeah, we fulfilled all that. We're ready to go. No. We aren't perfect. We sing a Yu-Yu hymn written using words by the Sufi mystic known as Rumi. And the original words are this: come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, it doesn't matter. Ours is not a caravan of despair, so come, even if you've broken your vow 100 times. Come. Come again. Come. These doors are open to you, Rumi says, even if you really screwed it all up. Even if you screwed it up once, tried to fix it, went back, and screwed it up again. It doesn't matter. Everything isn't over because you've made a mess this year. Come back. Try again. Yom Kippur and Rumi help us to hold true truths that seem to be opposite. You can forgive and be forgiven, and what you did or didn't do and what someone else did or didn't do can still change the world forever. There's a writer named Sam Greenspan. He often is quite funny. He's best known for collecting the most ridiculous thoughts around the internet. He also collects the most profound that he finds. And he collected this statement from a site called Reddit that some of you may know. And it bothered him. This is the statement. One day your parents put you down and never picked you up again. I want you to think about that for a minute. One day you were fine. They could still carry you, even if only barely. But it was the last time. The next day or the day after that, it was too much. The next time it occurred to them, maybe they couldn't lift you. Maybe they were too small, or you were too big, or they were too tired, or you were too energetic. Maybe you were all just too old. Maybe it was cultural or social. And maybe someone was mean or someone was drunk and someone wasn't there anymore. The reasons don't matter. The world was different after the minute they put you down for the last time. Mistakes and forgiveness work the same way. Things change. When we first learn about forgiveness as children, it starts as a ritual, the ritual you heard in our children's story this morning. Hey, you did something mean. Quit it. That wasn't nice. And we all say, I'm sorry. Someone hurts someone else. They feel guilty or they just get caught. And they say the magic words, I'm sorry. It's magic, right? Didn't we learn that as kids? And we learn to complete the ritual, because nobody likes conflict, right? To complete the ritual, you automatically say, I forgive you. Because that's the other half of the ritual. I'm sorry, I forgive you. Now it's all done, it's in a box, and we put it away. And mom or dad or grandma or teacher or minister can look the other way, and we can all go back to having our lives. I'm sorry, I forgive you. Religion tends to reinforce this The Christian book of Matthew says, "But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well." Buddhism says approximately the same thing. It teaches repeatedly of the need to forgive without being asked, saying, "He abused me, he struck me, he overcame me, he robbed me." And those who harbor such thoughts, hatred will never cease. The Buddhist reading gets you to the root of the problem, the hatred and fear and anger which arises when someone hurts you. Letting go of these can be a good thing. But the problem happens in how we are conditioned. We're conditioned not to do the work, not to really let go. We're conditioned to have someone say, "I'm sorry," and we say, "I forgive you," and then it's done. And there's something wrong with us if we're still hanging on to it, right? Because that's not what we got taught. Those are magic words. And we have a problem when we try to pretend that those magic words really work. We say them, and then we let them fester and dig because we shouldn't feel that way. We have to be the bigger person, right? Have you ever been told that? Be the bigger person. Forgive them. We have to let bygones be bygones. Anybody ever told you that one? Oh, just let it go. It's done. Let bygones be bygones. That's easy to say, but how do we do that? How do we and when do we really let go, and what are we letting go of? Because if we really value the worth and dignity of every person, we have to include ourselves. It's easy to get angry because black and brown people are being treated as objects and battered by police officers. It's easy to accept dismay without embarrassment when LGBTQ people are treated as second-class citizens. We agree they have worth and dignity. We get that. An insult to them is an insult to all of us. But we're not always so good at defending our own value. I'm going to give you three lines, and I want you to think about them. I want you to repeat them in your own mind. I have inherent worth and dignity. I have value. And here's the big one. I am allowed to be angry when I am harmed. And for some of you, your mind is going, "Well, yeah, but wait a minute." No. You have inherent worth and dignity. You have value, and you are allowed to be angry when you are harmed. Doesn't sound like forgiveness, does it? But it's the first step toward actual healing, not just saying magic words. Redemption and absolution and forgiveness, none of these can happen if you have no value, if you don't claim your worth. Something of value was damaged when you're the offended against party. Something valuable was broken, and it was you. Think about that just for a minute. When you have been unable to forgive someone for something, how much of it has been because they just wouldn't admit what they did? They didn't feel sorry, or they didn't seem sincere enough in their efforts to make it right. Somehow it matters. We've been told that it matters, that they validate our experience of being hurt, that the extent of their apology somehow defines our wound. We run headlong into this with the Black Lives Matter movement. As black people are saying, "You're killing us, you're hurting us," And white people are saying, it didn't bother me all that much. I don't know why you're so angry. It happens in our daily lives when someone hurts us and we say to them, you hurt me. And they say, oh, it was just a joke. You ever heard that one? It was just a joke. Or they say, oh, I didn't mean to. Sorry about that. Doesn't make it feel much better. Forgiveness is not a shared construct. Let me say that again. Forgiveness is not a shared construct. If I've been hurt, it's certainly nice to have the other person recognize it. But their recognition isn't needed. My hurt is there. And if I hurt someone else, it's certainly nice if I recognize it. But the hurt is there whether I see it or not. Sometimes it isn't possible because of age or distance, mental health, death, refusal. Doesn't matter. My word that I am hurt is enough. And when I own my right to be angry when I'm hurt, I also own my right to put away the weight of that anger when it no longer suits me. The other person's permission or action isn't required. Once we reclaim our right to actually feel hurt, to accept our own anger when we are wounded, what do we do with that? Experience it, explore it, make them a part of your journey toward truth and meaning. Take the time you need to understand where the pain is coming from. And then let it go. Because forgiveness isn't about forgetting. It doesn't wash it away. It isn't magical. It doesn't mean that whoever hurt you didn't mean it. So what really is the meaning? For a moment, try to forget everything you've assumed before today. Some of you know that the Greek word for the idea of forgiveness was a thesis. In modern English, the closest translation would be letting go or release. Now, just for a moment, don't make it any harder than that. Release. Forgive means to choose to take someone who you've been holding in your debt, holding in hatred, holding in resentment, holding in bitterness, and to release them. It means to let go of the chains that have tied you to one another since you were hurt, or since you hurt them. Forgiveness is not saying someone's bad actions are all okay now. It's not turning a blind eye to injustice. It means you choose. The victim chooses. To release somebody from a personal obligation to you, you remove the unwanted ties binding you together in a relationship that weighs you down. You choose to put away a situation you finished learning from. And Yom Kippur gives us a date and a time each year to make those choices. A place to say, here is where I will start over every year. On May 11th of 2002, a 22-year-old named Eric Smallridge was driving drunk in Pensacola, Florida, and he hit another car. There were two 20-year-old girls in it, Megan Napier and Lisa Dixon. Funny, funny kids with loving families, and both girls were killed instantly. He was convicted of DUI manslaughter and got sentenced to 22 years in prison. And once he was there, he wrote to their families, the families he had hurt so badly, apologizing and promising to make the remainder of his life mean something. Megan's mother, Renee Napier, found that her grief was killing her. And she made it her life's mission to prevent it from happening to many other parents. She founded the Megan Napier Foundation for DUI Awareness in memory of their kids. And for years, she kept organizing events around Florida and feeling like something was missing. And she kept writing back to Eric, the man who had killed her child. 3 years into a sentence, they wrote to the judge asking for mercy. And then she went a step further. She asked that he be allowed to begin changing his life in her child's name right now. She lobbied to have Smallridge join her in her teaching efforts. And since 2010, they have formed the strangest partnership ever. From 2010 until 2012, he would appear at events in his shackles and his prison jumpsuit, escorted to and from by armed guards. And after she would speak, he would be introduced, letting students see the reality of life after a DUI manslaughter conviction. Primarily because of the work of the victims' families, in 2012 he was released. And he keeps touring with the foundation. And although she has said she cannot forget, Napier said she's forgiven him. She's grown to love him and his family and considers him to be like a son. I could be angry and hateful and bitter, she said in an interview, but I don't want to live my life that way. There was no way I could move on without forgiving Eric. Eric has told multiple interviewers that even though she's forgiven him, he is not ready to forgive himself and doesn't know if he ever will. Though they admit their relationship may confuse people, they both agree that it has been life-saving and has helped them both heal. Whenever I see Renee, I just see an angel, Eric told ABC News. Her response was clear. We live in a world with pain and heartache, and I want to promote love and forgiveness and break that cycle of hatred. Was she extraordinary? Maybe. Or maybe she's just telling the truth. She couldn't live chained to that kind of pain and hatred. Monstrous things do happen. Things that are larger than a snub or a petty insult. Families are shattered. Lives are changed. And then what? Are we all supposed to be angels? No. Only you can decide when you are ready to put it down. And putting it down doesn't mean letting the same person hurt you over and over again. Renee changed Eric's life. She did not hand him a beer and put him back in a driver's seat and say, it's okay. Forgiveness isn't forgetting. Letting someone continue to destroy you or others isn't forgiveness. It isn't a free pass for someone who shows no sign of remorse. It isn't an invitation for a toxic person to continue to hurt you or for you to continue to abuse someone else. Forgiving people doesn't mean they are safe to have in your life. It means that you are letting go of the chains that bind you together so that those chains stop destroying you or them. For each of us, the time and space it takes to process our hurt and anger is different. Some of us need professional help to examine the situation and move onward. That's fine. You are not wrong for taking the time you need. It only becomes wrong when you become locked there, unable to move. It only becomes wrong when the only answer you want to hear is make it not have happened, or undo what happened, or let me undo what I did. Even when we've caused the problem, we need to give ourselves the time and space to examine what we've done, because we have value. If you refuse to forgive yourself for your mistakes and proclaim that what you did was unforgivable, you destroy a piece of your own worth. You chain yourself to a younger, perhaps less wiser version of yourself. And you might as well announce to the world, my journey has ended here. I will never get any better. You have worth. You have value, even when you have done terrible things. Remember, forgiveness is not a shared construct. You don't need permission to forgive someone else, not even theirs. And you don't need permission to forgive yourself. Forgiveness is a release from ties we never wanted, which binds us to things we didn't enjoy. It is an escape from the darkness of anger and hatred and despair. It doesn't mean you gave up or that you decided what was done was okay. It means you're brave enough to light a lamp and look for a way forward, to look for a way home, to a place where you feel safe and loved and whole. It isn't about wiping the slate clean. There are no magic words, and the world does change, and there's no way to change it back. But you cannot remain locked together in a spiral of offense and guilt and shame. We're not perfect, and Yom Kippur recognizes that, and it tells us no one is. It tells us admit what you did, forgive yourself, and go forward into the light of day. Forgive yourself, forgive others when you're ready. Because forgiveness isn't saying, I'm sorry. Forgiveness is allowing yourself to be whole again. And you deserve that. Be whole. Amen.
Carry this light into the world and light the lamps to welcome one another in. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, number 1000, Morning Has Come, in the teal hymnal. Thank you.
us go, remembering to praise, to live in the moment, to love mightily, and to forgive always, to welcome each other home. Peace, and may it be so.